half utterances searching in the past, grappling, groping, never last, in my body, in my heart, and in my mind, but not on my tongue. And so my song has not been sung, but with the help of Saba, they are singing the song of the Negro League baseball player. Yes. Thank you, Saba. Thank you very much. I've done a lot of things that I like doing. Yes. I hit the home run. Didn't hit it off Bob's elbow. I hit the Grand Slam home run. I hit for the cycle. Yes. I stole home base to win a ball game. I've done a lot of things I like doing. I travel across this country with this man, Bobby Feller. And to tell you the truth, the Major League ball players that played with Bobby Feller, some of them made more money on that tour than they did the entire season. And you know, the Negro League baseball players made more money than they made all season with this man right here. But I've done a lot of things I like. I shook hands with our dear president, President Truman. Yeah, at a ball game. I shook hands last year with President Clinton. And I hugged Hillary. So I've done a lot of things that I like doing. But I tell you what, I'd rather be right here, right now, talking to the Saber Group than any place I've ever been. Yes. I enjoy this. I relish this because you've done so much for me and the Negro League players. With your stats, we're able to get more Negro League ball players in the Hall of Fame. And we're going to get them there. We're going to get Bully Joe Logan there. Yeah. We're going to get Smokey Joe Williams there. We're going to get these great baseball players there. We're going to get Hilton Smith there. We're going to get all these ball players that should be there. We're going to get them in the Hall of Fame. And I tell you what, God's been so good to me. Yeah. I've got, still, got my five senses. Yeah, I'm 84 years old. Got all of my organs, some of them still work. Now you guess the one that's not working. But anyway, I want to tell you about the Negro League. It was formed right here in Kansas City. When you go down to the museum, you're going to be right a block from the Paseo YMCA, where Ruth Foster, J.L. Wilkinson, some other owners of the Negro League teams, they formed the Negro National League in 1920, right here. And I tell you what, I don't want you to believe that the Negro League were anything like Bingo Long. Uh-uh. I don't want you to believe that the Negro League was anything like the latest RBIO program. No, wasn't like that. Let me tell you something about that Negro League. With me, coming from the Seraph Fields in Florida to play with the great Kansas City Monarchs was just like a white kid going from the textile mills in Georgia, South Carolina, or the cotton fields in Alabama to play with the New York Yankees. This was tough for me. And I really enjoyed it. And great, great Kansas City. Kansas City was wide open. And here I come to Kansas City. You should have seen me. I had two brand new suits, looking good, I thought. But when I walked on 18th Street and Vine, they wasn't wearing the kind of suits I was wearing. So I went to the pawnbroker, Hurst. I said, Mr. Hurst, will you take my two suits and give me one suit like these boys are wearing? He gave me the zoot suit. And I was strolling up in 18th and Vine, swinging that cane. And I just knew I had a ride. Yeah. This was the Negro League. At 11 o'clock, every Sunday morning, in the black world, that's church time, Sunday morning service. When the monarchs came to town, the service was 10 o'clock, so they could get to the ball game. And they came. They came in droves. They marched from 18th and Vine to 22nd in Brooklyn to see Newt Allen, Newt Joseph, see the great baseball players, the Monty Irvins, yeah, guys we had here, the Ernie Banks, the Elston Howard, they would come to see these great baseball players. So actually, the league was actually something. It was outstanding. Because I tell you what, we put a lot of people in the ballpark. And I think one of the reasons that kept us out of the major leagues for so long, we played at Yankee Stadium. We got 35,000 people at Yankee Stadium. Over in Brooklyn that same Sunday, they would have 20,000. Out of that 35,000 we had, was 99.9% black. Mr. Ricky, the astute businessman that he was, he saw all of these. This was a brand new clientele. And he wanted some of that because he was in competition in New York with the great New York Yankees and the Giants. So this is one of the reasons, Jackie Robinson. And when you say Jackie Robinson to me, the hair come up the back of my neck. Because actually, when Ricky signed Jackie to that contract, it changed a whole lot of things in this country that needed changing. Yeah, when he signed that guy to that contract, hey, when he signed him, that was before Brown versus Topeka. That was the separate but equal thing in the school system. That changed. That's when it started changing, Doc. Yes. Martin Luther King was a sophomore at Morehouse when Jackie signed that contract. So it was a great day for this country. And a lot of people would say, and they want me to say, that Jackie wasn't the right man. Say it should have been Satchel, it should have been Josh, it should have been Monty Irvin. A lot of people are saying this. He picked the right man. He picked the right, let me tell you something that man did. What he did to us. We have been going to a filling station for 20 years in Oklahoma. We've never used the restroom because the sign on the door said, for white only. Hilton Smith told me this. We got to the filling station that morning and the man came out, he put the hose in the tank. He said, boys, I really enjoyed you last night. Everything was wonderful. You played a great baseball game and a whole lot of people came to see you. It was wonderful. Jackie gets off the bus and he started toward the restroom. The man said, hey boy, where you going? Say, I'm going to the restroom. He said, boy, you know you can't go to that restroom. Jackie said, take the hose out of the tank. The man looked around and he thought a little, see, because we got a 50-gallon tank on this side. We got a 50-gallon tank on that side. He's not going to sell 100 gallons of gas to one customer until we came again. You know what he said? You boys can go to the restroom, but don't stay long. So, That was a jacket. See, Jackie, we had become accustomed to the policy. Yeah, and so we would do these things, but from that day on, the Kansas City Monarchs never got gas on the station. We couldn't go to the restroom. We never played ball in a town that they didn't have a hotel for us to stay in. We never played ball in a town that we didn't have a restaurant for us to play in. This is what Jackie started us. He taught us that well, you don't have to take this. You're spending your money. And like a lot of people say, the term come up, somebody said, nigga, this. But I always combat that with, you call me whatever you want to call me, but you know what I am? I am an American. And don't you forget it. I just happen to be a black American, but I'm an American just like you. And you and I demand all of the things that an American should have. Yes. And see, always been more good people than bad. Yes. But the only thing I hold against your fathers or your grandfathers, they let the bad do these things. They let them, they turn their head and let the bad do it. See? Because I can handle the bigot. Because I love the man. I don't love the things that they will do. I don't like the things the Klan will do. No, I don't like the things the skinhead will do, but I can't hate a man. That's one of God's creatures. So how could I hate him? No. I love him. I love him. I made a friend with a man I'm scouting in Louisiana, and we were holding a clinic at Southern University at Baton Rouge. Southern University is an all-black university, the biggest black university in this country. And I'm hitting fly balls to two outfielders in right field. One was black and one was white. And we had a young scout. This was his first year. He's a white scout and he's from Mississippi. And he would feed me the ball. He'd give me the ball to hit and then they'd catch him when they come in. So that's what he was doing. So after I hit the ball on these 10 or 12 balls out there to bowl these kids. And he said, you know what, Bob? That nigga looked pretty good. I said, which one? And so, 3 years later, I'm in Mississippi. He and his wife asked me over to his house for dinner. And, well, we made friends. And he had a son. His son was about 10 years old. And we were eating dinner. And the scout said, hey, Bob, you remember those two kids we worked out at Southern University? And what happened to them? I said, I signed the nigga. And his son said, which one? And the nigga happened to be in Lou Brock. Yeah, so actually, but I made a friend. I could have left him in the dark and not been friendly with him. But no, that's not my way. That wasn't the monarch way. No, that wasn't the monarch way. Let me tell you about the monarch, the Kansas City Monarch. When a kid would come here, he would come from Arkansas, somewhere to Cotton Field in overalls. We would send him down to Miles Till on 18th Street. Let him buy 2 suits of clothes. He bought them on time. When he'd come back, payday, he would put some down on the suits. That's the Kansas City Monarch. And another thing, we had a kid, came out of Louisiana, the Cotton Field, and had an excellent mind, a good ball player. And he would always come downstairs and he would buy the paper. He would be there by the downstairs and he said, "Hey, come on, Buck, come on, read about what happened in the major leagues." I said, "Okay." And I would read the paper for him and all. And he would get in the bus and he would get that paper, he'd be in the back of the bus. And he would repeat verbatim what I had read in that paper. So one morning it happened and he had the paper back there like he was reading it, and the paper was bottom side up. I didn't say nothing. And after we got to the city, I said, "You can't read, man." He said, "No." He said, "But I sure wish I could." I said, "Well, okay, we will show you." I got a primer, and Hilton Smith and I, every night, we would teach that boy, we taught that boy, he learned how to read, he learned how to read. Then after the baseball season, he went to school, he went to school, and actually finally got his high school diploma. That was the Kansas City Marlins. Man, great outfit. And here in Kansas City, the people always tell me now, "Oh, Buck, you're too soon, you came too soon." Now, that's why I wrote the book. I was right on time. I didn't come too soon. Well, segregation was a horrible thing. Segregation was a horrible thing, but I tell you what, in baseball, we did something about it. Yeah, we started changing the things in this country that should have been changed, but we're here. I tell you what I could do. I stayed at the Streets Hotel, 18 and Vine. The Streets Hotel wasn't as elaborate as the Muehlbach Hotel where you live, but the bed was clean. Yeah. The food was good. The food might have been better because the best cooks in the world, them were black. So, and I could come downstairs. I could come downstairs a Sunday morning and sitting over there in the corner, Duke Ellington. "Hey, Buck, how you doing?" Over here could be Count Basie. Sitting at the table with them could have been Sarah Vaughan. "Hi, Buck, how you doing?" I said, "Hi, Sarah." Yeah, so this was Kansas City. I was making $100 a month. Got a dollar a day for meal money. So I glory when these kids get $5 million. Yeah. But let me tell you, that was during the Depression. Out of that dollar a day meal money, I could go down to the Rose Room, which was in the Streets Hotel, ham and eggs, yes, a cup of coffee, 25 cents. Only ate two meals a day. For dinner, I could have a Kansas City strip, a baked potato, some beans, and a dessert for 35 cents. Now, I know all of you people quit smoking just like I did, but I smoke Camel cigarettes. I got a pack of Camel cigarettes for 15 cents. Yeah. The matinee, go to the show. The gym was right up the street from me, from the hotel, and down the street was the Lincoln Theater. I could go to the matinee for 10 cents. Heard Harlem Leonard play. Yeah. Heard all of these things. And out of that dollar, I had 15 cents to play with. And that $100 a month, I took $50 of that money and sent it to Luella. That was my mother. So this was just that time, the money wasn't like it is now, but the money is there now. And the ball players are getting it. And they always tell me that, "Well, the ball players aren't as good now as they were when you played." Well, I tell you what, the athlete today is better than any athlete ever been because he's in better shape. But the thing about it is, it's hard to see another bonded fella. The only reason it's so hard to see these guys are cold facts, because in that day, the best athlete in the world played baseball. Yeah, because football, basketball was more or less a college game. And to make a living, a good living, professionally, you played baseball. So what we had the greatest white athlete in the world played baseball. The greatest black athlete in the world played Negro League baseball. Yeah. And I don't know if, yeah, some of you here old enough to see this kid pitch. You should have seen it. They told me, Frank Duncan told me, he said, now, if you throw your fastball right here, take it, because it's going to jump up to there. That's right. Good riding fastball. But what Frank didn't tell me, that damn curveball he had. Ooh, man, he had a great curveball. Well, all of these things, but you learn these things. You learn these things. Now, I'm not going to keep you here all day, but I could talk to you all night about this great game of baseball. But I want to put this on your mind. I will not let no commissioner, I will not let no president of any baseball league, I will not let any owner of a baseball league, I will not let any head of any union spoil baseball for me. And I want you to do the same thing. Come to the ballpark, because this is our sport, baseball. Come out there. I want your kids, your grandkids to play baseball. Play baseball. It's a great, great sport. So don't let anybody spoil it. I saw, I'm old enough, Black Sox scandal. Yeah, people left the ballpark. A lot of people left the ballpark because, well, baseball is tainted. And here comes a broad shoulders, skinny leg guy with the prettiest swing I ever saw hitting the ball out of the ballpark. That was Babe Ruth. He brought baseball back. The people started loving baseball again. Then Bobby Feller went to war. Yes, Ted Williams went to war. DiMaggio went to war. The great ball players went to war, so that hurt it a little. But they didn't let it spoil baseball because they came back. They came back. And so this is my game. I've made my living here 65 years, man. And baseball, if can't nobody fire me, I'm not going to let you fire me. I'm in baseball. Baseball is my life. Yes. And that's why I wrote the book. I wanted to tell you the story about, not only Bob Feller, I wanted to tell you the story about Henry Mason. I wanted to tell you the story about Slick Soret, Jesse Rogers. I want you to know about these great athletes. And another thing, too. They weren't only, they probably all monarchs made great citizens. Yeah. So don't go around feeling sorry for me or the guys that played in the Negro Leagues. A writer told me, I eulogized Satchel Paige, and he said, Buck, it is a shame that Satchel didn't get a chance to pitch against the greatest ball players in the world when he was in his prime. I said, listen, right? Who is it to say that he wasn't playing against the greatest ball players in the world? Yeah. Buy that book before you go out of here. The book needs a little change. I need a little change for Ora. Ora said, you're going downtown? Yeah. Said, you're going to sell some books? I said, yeah. She said she needs a new dress. So I want you to buy the book. But as I said, I could talk all day, but I'm not going to, because I told you I was 84 and I need to go to the bathroom.